Welcome back to Lost in Jersey.
Hey, I like that. Welcome back. Today we have a very VIP guest.
Yes, we do.
My sister. She's VIP today. She is the guest, my sister Maria. We've known each other ever since I've been alive, and she's
that's really long.
She's agreed to come on and tell us her story, which is in the beginning a lot like mine, but then it deviates. She becomes a journalist, a consumer advocate journalist for Dateline, and then she has a journey back to our home country, the country of my father's, Iran, and she talks about what she did there while she was there. She's always been very active in caring and helping others. And it really comes through. And what was her first reaction of what she needed to do when she got there? And it really tells a lot about who she is as a person, that that is really her driving force. It always has been. As a matter of fact, I mean, I'm going to give you a little tidbit about this. My sister, you'll even notice I'm the dark one and she's like the light one. That she's very friendly. And I was always like, let's go. Okay, let's go. She'll talk to people. She'll like really engage and be friendly, where I'm always like, let's go. I want to go. So now I make sure that if we have to do anything, I take a separate car so I can go.
That is hilarious. So then our listeners will definitely be able to tell those subtle differences when they hear this episode between the two of you. But I think you guys are a nice yin yang to each other.
Yeah, we are. I love her. And without any further ado, here is Maria Afsharian. Welcome, Maria, to the podcast. Thank you for being on our program.
Wow. It's a pleasure to be here. This is exciting. I'm so proud of you two. I've been watching you as you go through this journey, and you're inspiring. And I think it's awesome. So thanks for having me on. I feel very special. Thanks.
Thank you, Maria. You've been our fan.
Yes, I have. I have that. I love seeing people succeed. I really do. I don't know where I got it from. I just really love seeing people succeed.
Appreciate you cheerleading. Yeah. It's really nice because you've been a constant cheerleader throughout the whole highs and lows, and you get the behind the scenes of our lows.
Yeah, you do.
Well, I mean, I think that it's really easy to talk about doing stuff, but it's, stepping into the light is not easy because you put yourself out there. Everyone puts themselves out there. Well, you've inspired me.
Yeah. I feel like some people do get a little inspired by people just going for it and not being perfect. I think that's really the beauty of like our podcast.
Yes.
Is because we're not perfect. Yeah. And people are all like, I could do that. And some people might be like, why are they doing that?
When there's too much perfection, though, I think that it takes some of the interest out of it. I mean, I think that you want to relate to people. And that's part of the whole thing about like, can I do something, you know? Yeah. Thank you for doing this.
For people that didn't listen to the intro, you are my sister. If people haven't already figured that out by our voices,
you can tell by the hair,
and the way we look.
And the lipstick. And
lipstick, definitely.
Yeah. So we've actually been very close sisters all of our lives. We've grown up kind of living together. We actually started living together in our own apartment together. I believe I was 17 and you were 20, I think, or something, 21. You're 4 years. We're about 3.5 years difference.
Yeah.
And we lived together for all through college. And then a couple of times during our adult life, and we've been pretty close in that way. Every once in a while, we move in with each other.
Yeah. I mean, Dad kind of inspired that. And I think it comes from his background.
Yeah. So tell people about our background, your background.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. My background. Well, my background is your background too.
But I'm sure you guys have slightly different perspectives, because even if you grow up in the same house, it's different. It's different.
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of think that when I try to explain our life, I think that it's kind of a zigzag. You know, I was born in Iran and my parents, you know, they got married, they moved to Iran, and I was born in Shiraz. And then my parents moved back to the States, and that's where Jeanette
was born.
Jeanette made her introduction in Midland, Texas, because dad.
So I can run for president.
Yes.
Maria cannot.
I cannot. And then we moved back to Iran, and we lived in Tehran. We lived in northern Tehran, had a really wonderful, you know, I thought we lived in a great area of town. It was a wonderful experience. And, but alas, mom and dad decided they didn't want to be, you know, living together, and they divorced. And I think being that we were girls and dad thought that we would probably be best with mom, you know, we came back to the States. And so we moved back to Lubbock, Texas, where mom is from. And so I see it as a zigzag. And, you know, we moved back to Texas and grew up there. I'm really glad we had that experience. But
we both had big blonde hair.
Yes,
I had blonde hair, and Maria had blonde hair, and it was big.
I love it.
I still have big hair.
Yeah, I know you do.
I do. I like big hair. I'm this flat. But anyway,
dad would come and he'd be like, please change your hair. He didn't. He
like,
wasn't
you look like
it.
A doll. I'm like, well, but the thing is, though, I don't know if Jeanette's ever told you this. Our mom was a hairdresser.
Yeah, I have told her.
A cosmetologist. And she used to practice on my head. Yeah. And she would cut my hair like really short. And I just remember crying and saying, I'm never going to have short hair again.
So your hair
that's right.
Always,
you were scarred by that experience.
I was scarred.
Yeah, I get it. You don't want a cosmetologist, even if it's your mom, to practice on you.
Yeah,
no. So that's, you know, that's what that's going on. But anyway, I went to school there and got my degree in communications, but there really weren't any jobs for me there. So we started looking for ways to try to move, and I moved to DC. My dad, when he would come to visit, my dad had stayed in Iran. And so when we came to visit, we would go to Washington. The embassy was there. And I would tell Jeanette, I don't know if you remember.
I remember.
This is my town. I love this town. It's this is where I need to be. Can you imagine? What do we do? What do we do? How do we get here? And, you know, and then fast forward, it happened.
The thing that's interesting too, though, is that for people who make a move like that after college, you know, you kind of like loaded up your car and just, you know, drove. I remember driving with mom, with you, and we were all driving up in convoy to come here to go to DC. And, you know, you get there and you find a place to live.
We were in a hotel.
We were in a hotel, and then you get in a house, they rented a house, and then you start looking for a job. And you pretty quickly, I know you started working for USA Today, pretty, I think that was your first job. And you started working there, and then you quickly did a maneuver to Dateline NBC. And you start, your career started taking off.
Yeah, I think that making the big move to DC, I knew I was taking a big chance, and I'd given myself 6 months, and I said, if you don't make it, you can move back. And I think I was just so determined. And at that time, USA Today was my favorite newspaper, and NBC was my favorite TV channel. So, I mean, really what happened was I worked at USA Today, and I remember watching the movie Dead Man Walking. Do you guys remember that movie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Great movie.
And I remember just being so in awe. It was, I think, Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins, they made that film. And it was kind of a, you know, talking about a social issue, a very controversial social issue. And I remember thinking when I saw Dead Man Walking, wow, media is so powerful. These people are able to make this film and put a message out there. I went and took a couple of TV classes at the local community college. I already had my degree, but I went and because I was like, I got to get an internship. How do I get an internship? And that's how I did it. Is I took a couple of classes, news writing and TV production. And I was like, I got to get an MBC. And there was a woman's phone number in the folder in the internship room. And it was a woman who worked for Dateline NBC. Yeah. So I got
an internship.
Yeah. I got an internship at Dateline. And they, what was exciting was they had, it was a consumer unit. The consumer unit was based in DC. Mm-hmm. It was the most amazing opportunity because consumer journalism is a unique type of journalism.
What does that mean exactly? I don't even know what that means. Consumer journalism.
Okay. Hold on. Let me, I'll tell you one story. I remember Maria was talking to us about once.
And it nobody was, wanted it, to be around me. Let's just say that.
It was annoying. No, she'd be like, did you know that, you know, it was like, I think it was about garage door openers once. Yeah. It was something about how people could break into people's homes or something. I don't remember, but I remember that's always stuck in my head. This big long like piece door that you opener. Did. Do you remember that?
Yeah, no, you weren't the only one. I mean, I was, you know, people would say like, oh, I want to buy a car. I'm like, you know, 95% of people, you know, because we used to do the crash test. You know, if you ever saw Dateline and you would see
The dummies and they would like fly all over.
Yeah, that was near us. When you saw the hidden camera, it was very likely it came from our office. I did a ton of hidden camera. Because it was, you could do that down there in the state in Virginia, the laws, you could do that. So
the nail salons, that was the worst one. That was the worst one. You were like, people are like losing their hand. They're dying. You know, and it was,
God.
If you got, you know, bad manicure, you know, or something like that, if it was like. Something fungus.
I mean, I would interview people that said, you know,
get like a staph infection, right? They were like,
consumer journalism is very important. I mean, it has to do with safety and protection. And you had kids who were getting hurt in cribs. So we would work with the consumer, you know, the National Consumer Centers. And honestly, I was really proud of that. It was very, very, I was working with amazing people, great journalists, so professional. I mean, I think I was one of those people, though, that was always like, I'm so grateful to be here because I was so grateful because, you know, I have my degree is from Lubbock, Texas. It's not an Ivy League school. It's, you know, and I was surrounded by all these amazing people. So I'm still grateful. I still can't believe it. And
well, that's why I think both of us are such huge advocates of internships, you know, that really and truly can help so many people. And I'm always just, I think we all know, you know, that you got to get in the door through an internship.
But in DC, it was a little less formal. It was the mailroom, like literally like I was delivering mail, but it was wonderful because I was actually delivering mail to Nightly News, which was in the same building. I was delivering mail to WRC, which was the local television affiliate. And I was meeting everybody in the building. And I was like, do you have anything extra to do? Can I help you with anything? And, you know, they were very friendly about it because really that's how most people get started in the building.
Yeah.
And then I did actually get a job in the building at the local NBC affiliate. Kept knocking on Dateline, which was on the third floor. Like, hey, anything, you know, anybody need any research? And luckily I, you know, somebody took maternity leave and I was brought in to help run the office. And I was like, I'm going to learn everything. I'm going to learn how to run the fax machine. I'm going to like be the best. I'm going to be, you know, I mean, that's what you have to do, I think.
It is. Yeah.
I mean, it was just a great place to be and being in the middle of all that and all the news and just good people.
You had an amazing career there, but you did eventually leave. It was supposed to be temporary, but it ended up being for 7 years you left. It was because our father had come to visit. And I had just had my first child and I couldn't go back to Iran with our father because he had passed away while he was here. And you had not been back to Iran in 30 years, I think, at that time. And wow. I had gone a couple of times back and forth, but Maria had never been back. And I thought I would go, but I couldn't. And so she was like, I will go back. And it was a very traumatic period of our lives that you had to fly back with our father for his funeral with him. That, you know, that's a dark part of our story. And you went back for the first time in 30 years back to
Iran.
What
was that like to step off the plane that first time after 30 years? Did it collide with your memories from when you were last there? Or were you so young that...
Well, Jeanette's right. I mean, it was a very traumatic period. Being with Dad in the hospital, and he would say, I miss home, which he meant Iran. And I said, Dad, I'm going to take you home. We didn't know at that time that he was going to pass either. We just didn't believe it. But I told my dad, I said, I'm going to take you home. When we brought Dad back to Iran after he passed, we're met at the airport. This huge family is there. It's Jeanette and mine's family. And
huge family.
Huge family. And I just remember the plane touching down. And, you know, I was like, oh my God, you know, this is, I'm in Iran. Oh my God, this is. And so we just went through the motions. And then, you know, they had the funeral, the Muslim way. And I just remember just looking up at the sky and I was like, this is really weird. I don't really feel like a stranger here. And I didn't. I didn't feel like a stranger here. I think that we all have this memory, genetic memory, that wherever you are in the world, you may have something from your heritage or something.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you also
pizza, or you don't like pizza. You know, it's just these are genetic things.
Right.
I mean, so
but you were 12. You were 12 when you left. I mean, it's not like you were a toddler. I mean, we weren't like we have memories.
Our formative years.
Yeah, we have our
And to Jeanette's point, and I think Jeanette and I had our formative years in Iran, and I went to an international school, and Jeanette went to an international school, and so we were with kids from all over the world, and it was a good experience, and I think that. But, you know, we did miss the revolution. We left before the revolution happened. I didn't carry the trauma that I've heard sent from my classmates since then of what happened. One day it became a girls and boys school and everybody was leaving. And I didn't have that. So,
right.
So I would say that when I got there, I was like, you know, this kind of feels normal to me. I'm looking at the blue sky. I'm like, this was okay. I mean, I wasn't thinking about staying,
right.
But I set out on a journey and I said, you know, I would tell anyone that I saw, I was like, you know, I want to do something for my dad. I want to do something for my dad. And then somebody would show up and say, well, come to this children's ward. And I'd go to the children's ward and I'd saw that the walls were bare and there wasn't chairs in the room. And so then I would start, you know, rallying family and saying, let's get chairs like we had with Dad and let's have those made so that parents can be with their kids. Mm-hmm. Let's get an artist in here to paint the walls with cartoons. You know, so those were kind of like the early things. And I still didn't know what to do. So I just remember a voice came in my head, just like, just keep walking. And so I just walk and I'd meet people and I'd go this direction and go this direction. What happened was, is I learned about restrictions the U.S. has on its citizens in Iran. And I was not able to do certain things because of sanctions. And I don't like to get into politics or anything. But U.S. said, even though I was born in Iran, I'm still subject to sanctions. I mean, my hands are tied on a lot of different things. So I had to adjust and start thinking differently. And I said, well, I still want to do something. And I said, you know what? You need to just work within the system. You need, you know, all this, like, we're going to bring something new and we're going to inspire people and, you know, it's just not going to work. So I finally decided I need to work within the system. And, you know, there was this amazing charity that I'd heard about in Tehran for kids with cancer. And what I did was I looked at their brochure, and one of their objectives was to spread out a little bit more into other areas of Iran. So I went to Tehran and I sat before them and I said, you know, we need you. We need you in Shiraz, which is located in southern Iran.
Doing this, and I remember we would talk about it, and I remember you would be on the phone just kind of in awe that it was actually happening. And you were telling me that there would be kids that would have to travel to Tehran that are
in
the south.
Can you give people an idea who don't understand the geography of Iran, how far that would be to travel from Shiraz to Tehran?
They have buses, but I think it's a day bus.
So to get treated would be really impossible for kids to go all the way up to Tehran.
It's a 9-hour drive to so it's not impossible, but it's also, you know, for somebody that lives in the rural areas,
you're not going to be you don't have the financial ability yet and all of that. It's not possible.
It's like going to New York City, you know. It's like it's like from the country
and they don't
to
have
New
the
York
money.
City
and anyone who's had a family member with cancer, as you know, this is not like a one day thing. A lot of people were farmers, like I was saying, tribal, you know, it's just too far.
I remember it was really sweet because I was so incredibly in awe of what you had pulled off. And I was just, I was like, well, you just don't have to do anything else ever again. You kind of like check life. Done. Check. I pulled this off. I was like, wow, you came back after this incredible, you know, thing was in place and you came back. And what was that?
Yeah, what was the decision process to decide to move here? You miss Jeanette.
I miss Jeanette. okay. So I have to say this, it's hard to live in Iran. I'm sure that's not a surprise to anyone.
Yeah.
It's hard. I was tired. I couldn't get hired and be working there.
Right.
I couldn't start ancillary services. So my hands were tied. So basically I felt like, you know what? This is not mine anymore. This is something bigger than myself.
And I was in New Jersey. So you decided, well, I love DC, but I want to give this New York area a try. So you came here and you made roots here.
Yeah. I mean, we always kept in touch, of course, sisters, we kept in touch and, you really enjoyed it here in New Jersey. And I was like, okay, well, I'm up for it. Let's go to New Jersey. And,
but you decided that you were going to try to do, you know, journalism on your own, and you were reporting and, you know, kind of building a good online community for yourself. And, you know, you've had like a lot of stories you like to report on, but I think eventually you decided because we have a background in real estate.
The reason we're here is because of real estate.
My mother, her uncle, they all are real estate people in Texas. And so they have like a bunch of stuff. And anyway, so Maria was talking to my uncle a lot and she started deciding that she would kind of go the direction of real estate by becoming a realtor, which is a smart thing to do if you want to not go into the office every day, right?
Yeah. I mean, real estate changes lives, which is one of my,
that is for sure.
And, you know, my dad was a student from Iran and my grandfather had chosen to be a property owner that rented out units. And, my dad had answered an ad to rent one of those units. And that is how they met. And my mom and dad met.
I'm glad you told that story. A lot of people ask that story, actually.
Yeah.
How did your parents meet? And
she probably was like, oh my gosh, you know, Omar Sharif is at my door. I think like back then, like Omar
was like everybody's
like, you have this exotic guy from, you know, another country. It's like, hello, you know. And I think that mom, you know, being a Lubbock, Texas, you know, she's like, oh, wow. Which is pretty impressive because back then, who knew where the Middle East was? And she took a chance and she like went on this adventure with dad. They married.
That's a really big chance and a very big adventure. And then moved to Iran from Texas. I mean, that's pretty bold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, so anyway, so real estate is in, you know, that's our beginnings. And on my father's side, he also was a landowner. And, and our dad was always driving us around neighborhoods. Like, what do you think about that house? What do you think about that house? I'm like,
and now you're doing that. You're now.
It's what I'm doing. I'm like asking myself, what do you think about that house? Or I'm asking a client, what do you think about that house? What do you think? What do you think? You know, I mean, I really love real estate. I mean, it's something that I think a lot of people love talking about. And I think that housing is so important just for people, mm-hmm. like where you choose to dwell. Is affects so much of your life. Are you next to the park? Are you next to the train? Is it a new house? Is it an old house? I mean, it affects so much of your life. So it's such
You know, that's interesting you say that. Ever since, Rachel, I'm curious about this about you, if you have this too, because I know that you and I have similar tastes because there's a story in our background. We've tried to tell it many times. I don't know if we've ever told it, but just let's leave it at the fact that we have bid on the same house without knowing when we didn't know each other. And our houses are similar still today. Is there, I know that my thing for every house that everywhere I've always wanted to live, it had to be near transportation. It had to be almost like out my front door. Mm-hmm. That was my thing. What has been you guys's, like, you know, breaking, like it has to have anything. It doesn't have to have anything, but it has to have this.
For maybe both of us is feel. We're so about emotional. It's like you walk in and you just feel like,
the energy of the place.
Yeah. And it's so ridiculous because you should never do that.
Why not? Clearly. Why not? That seems like a good thing.
Well, kind of, but I mean, I guess I do all the research before I even get there. You know, like I do the research before I walk in, you know, on like the neighborhood. Like I know I want to be in a certain town with certain people that has the schools, the parks, the location to proximity to New York City or whatever. But the actual end up house.
If I get a bad feeling, I'm okay if I see a train stop.
If you hear the train really loudly,
or like this is right by the train. She like manifested that. Like when I first met her, she's like, oh, and by the way, there is a train.
Is that
like,
so you could get out of Dodge quick?
I don't know really what it is, but everywhere I have lived, it has to be. It's all about location, location, location for me.
Yeah.
So you work in the real estate market in Northern New Jersey.
Yes. So I am affiliated with Christie's. I am a broker. I have my broker's license and they're actually part of an arm of the auction house, the actual auction house. So a couple of months ago, we went and visited the auction house and I'm just like, oh
in
my
the
God,
city?
This is so great. Yeah.
It was it's so cool.
It was across from NBC. I'm like, this is NBC. And now I'm with Christie's. And they were like, if somebody comes to you as, you know, you're a realtor, but if somebody comes to you and is like, how much do you think this painting is? I mean, we have that access to be able to.
Yeah, that's cool.
To work with an auction house.
What's going on? Are houses still selling way above asking or is it flattening out because of interest rates or?
So what we see is the interest rates have gone up. Like, so they were extremely, and some say artificially low, the interest rates. Mm-hmm. And now they've kind of gone up to what a lot of people would say are normal. Really, we have the biggest issue in Northern New Jersey is a lot of people want to live here and we don't have enough housing. Mm-hmm. And so we have a big demand. You know, Montclair has 6 train stations.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Location, trains, me. That's why I'm here.
That's right. So when we work an open house, we get a lot of people from Hoboken and Secaucus, you know, Jersey City. They're having maybe their second child. That's something we see a lot. We see it all kinds, but something interesting that has happened in our town. I don't know if you're following the news. Montclair is one of, I think, like 5 towns in the state of New Jersey who has approved ADUs, which are accessory dwelling units.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's a very controversial decision. A lot of people do not want accessory dwelling units.
Meaning that you can build a house. That? Yeah.
Sure. So accessory dwelling units is very popular in like California, Oregon. I've read papers from Illinois. Accessory dwelling units are really where you can build an extra unit on your property. And sometimes it can be inside. I have to look at the regulation for Montclair. But ADUs can be inside the house, you know, above, behind the garage. But it has to be smaller. And there are like these rules and regulations.
But what's the difference between the people who have always had like a guest house? Yeah, a carriage house.
You know, in the olden days, right? In the olden days, before the whole proper zoning stuff came in. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a lawyer, by the way. This is
what. Yeah, just your speculation.
So all of our towns are zoned. They have zones. And it'll say, this is commercial. You can only build commercial stuff here. And this area is residential. You can build a single family. And then there's another zone over here that says 2-family or 3-family or 4-family. You know, so you have all these things. And then you have something in New Jersey, because it's so old, there are grandfathered uses. Their way that they used them in 1890. I mean, I understand the controversy. People don't want people renting out, building these things and renting out, you know, to strangers. But one thing that I really like about ADUs is being able to build units for people to age in place. Because when I talk about that there's not enough inventory, some people are living in a big house. They can't take the stairs anymore. It's not safe all the time to have a chairlift because of fire. You can't, you know, it's hard to get in and out. There's just different reasons. There's not a lot of one bedrooms on a first floor. So why not have an ADU, which is one floor? Your family can live in the main house or...
I am pushing for that for my family to build one for me in the back of the house. I swear to God. I was like, can we... Just look, you guys, you can live in the house. Just put me in the back. I'm really good with this.
We definitely need to reconstruct our garage because there's squirrel nests in there and it's disgusting. But if we could redo it and make it like heated and have a toilet.
You're out there.
I could live in there while the kids live in the house.
Yeah. I'll babysit.
Well, there's another reason that ADUs are sometimes popular, and that is kids that can't afford to buy homes.
Yeah, and that's happening more and more, for sure.
And so they have a unit in the house where they live. It's best case is away from the house, in the backyard somewhere. And I mean, we have a big, we call it a senior tsunami coming. With the senior centers.
As we wrap up this interview, I was thinking we do a shout out. So I was thinking that you would give a quick shout out to that, to what you're about to talk about the senior housing.
I have restaurants to recommend.
Oh, do both.
Okay. Both. We need both.
Well, first of all, I do want to say, if it's okay, I want to say New Jersey really is amazing. I mean, I love this podcast because you do talk about New Jersey. I was in Connecticut last week. They have like 3 highways.
You're going to throw Connecticut under the
bus. Connecticut's beautiful. But when you make a comparison, I think I heard on your podcast one day, somebody talked about how many roads we have here. And get here and there. But I was really, from being in New Jersey, I was so surprised that there was only like 3. There was like Route 1. The interstate, 15. True. And it's like, you can't get anywhere if you're not.
That's true. Absolutely.
SOL.
So the infrastructure of New Jersey and the diversity in New Jersey and the amazing towns that you have. I mean, I go all over and I see all these unique personalities and these cultures and all this, you know, all in one place. And then we have the beaches and then we have the mountains and then we have the Poconos and then we have New York City. And I'm just like, where else is this?
No, it's true.
I mean,
it's
I'm a huge fan of DC, but, you know, we had to drive to get to the beach. Like,
yeah.
But I mean, of course, I focus on aging in place. There's a lot of good organizations in Montclair. They are leaders. They're the ones who brought the ADUs in, I think. I think they're like the ones who led Gateway to Aging in Montclair, Aging in Place Montclair, really, really great services in Montclair. You know, sometimes you meet people who maybe don't need to move. They just need to downsize. Mm-hmm. You know, so as a realtor, I'm also there to help them adjust. They don't necessarily, nobody wants to move, really.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to move. And I know that a lot of people look at maybe a realtor and like, oh, they just want to sell my house. I actually don't, because I think there's enough business out there that if I can be of help to somebody to tell them how they can, I learned about Meals on Wheels. They'll come check on you every day. I didn't know about these services. I was in church and this woman looked at me and she said, she's an older lady. And she said, Maria, I can't drive anymore. I was like, okay. And she said, my kids are going to put me in a community. And she looked at me and she said, what if I don't like the community? Can I go back home? And I just, I mean, it just, you know, I don't know how to. It got me. Of like when my cousin said, that's the way life is.
Well, as we've learned, as we learn, as we're in our middle years, that aging is no joke. It is not for the faint of heart.
It's not, but there's a lot of care. You know, they talk about 75 is the new 65 because people are living longer. Everybody's being healthier. And so like, why not, you know, focus on these aging in place and these 80
well, all this stuff. I love that you are working on this stuff. I've always been.
Yeah,
a big,
it's really, really awesome, Maria.
I'm trying.
You are. You're not just trying. You're doing it. So tell
you
us your. Your shout outs for restaurants.
Is it okay that they're Persian? Some people might be interested.
You got a good Persian restaurant.
I am.
Tell us.
So we do have a Persian community in Northern and New Jersey. They have picnics and stuff like that. I'll give you the email where people can sign up for those. There is a great restaurant by this wonderful woman. Her name is Chef Shaheen. She's very popular in the community in Hasbrook Heights. It's Hasbrook called Saffron Heights. Bloom. We also have Kebab on the Clift in East Rutherford.
Yep.
And there's actually a community center there as well. We have Gandom Bakery, which is
in Patterson.
The guy went to Iran, learned how to make flatbread, and opened up his own. It's like a little grocery slash flatbread.
The bread's so good.
It's called Sangag, which means rocks, which meant in the olden days they would cook them on the rocks.
It's been a wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah,
and
thank you so much,
Maria.
Did
you want to know anything? Did you want to know anything about Jeanette? Like, I could.
I want to know all the dirty secrets about Jeanette. No,
she's a good person.
If you have anything to share, yes, but you know,
you know, she's one of the hardest people, working people I've ever met.
That I do know.
Oh my God.
Especially working on the podcast with her. I do know that. I just feel like she works 24/7.
You guys. Well, all of us are badass women getting up every day, doing all different kinds. We all have different lives. We all have different things that we're doing and we're showing up and we've done great and we're doing great. We make a lot of mistakes too along the way, but I'm just really grateful and for, you know, to be in this group of people, you know, so
me
you know,
too.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Me too.
Thank you. Thanks for letting your sister, you know,
yeah.
take along.
Thank you, Maria.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yes.
All right.
All right.
I love you.
I love you.
This podcast is produced by Rachel Martens and Jeanette Afsharian.
please follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We hope you share this pod with your friends and family and let us know what you think. Check out our website at lostinjersey.site. And don't forget to get lost.